Hello and welcome to An Engineer's Journey Through the Book of Mormon. We explore the Book of Mormon with the assumption that science worked the same then as it does now and that the characters are real people with the same types of feelings and tendencies as you and me today. The views and opinions expressed here are strictly those of the narrator and should not be considered official interpretations in any way. And now An Engineer's Journey Through the Book of Mormon. Hello and welcome back. To borrow a phrase from the Star Wars series, the land of Nephi had a phantom menace, someone wielding influence and building a following in the shadows. We'll talk about them today. Also, we'll see the Nephite nation trying out the system of judges established by King Mosiah in our last video. Alma the Younger, formerly a wicked young man, now sits on the judgment seat as the chief judge at the head of the Nephite government. Before I get into today's material, which is Alma chapters 1 through 3, I asked a trivia question in the last video that we should answer. What are the names of the three antichrists in the Book of Mormon? We'll meet one of them in a minute, although he's not the Phantom Menace. First, we had Sherem in Jacob 7. Today's discussion will include Nehor in Alma chapter 1. And in a future episode, we'll discuss the third antichrist named Korihor in Alma 30. By the way, this is a friendly reminder to subscribe if you haven't already. Mormon the narrator begins chapter 1 by setting the stage for what is about to happen. In verse 1, he tells us that King Mosiah had died and gone the way of all the earth. Nevertheless, it says, he had established laws, and they were acknowledged by the people, therefore, they were obliged to abide by the laws which he had made. During his first year as chief judge, Alma needed to figure out what to do about Nehor. Nehor, it says, was, quote, a man who was large and was noted for his much strength. In Mosiah 26, Alma, who was Alma the Younger's father, had received a revelation that allowed Nephites to leave the church if they no longer believed in it. Nehor, as we will see shortly, had been working among the Lamanites and Nephite dissenters for a long time. Now, with the change in church policy from Mosiah 26, Nehor was able to gain Nephite supporters as well as Lamanite and dissenting supporters. Verse 3, and he had gone about among the people, preaching to them that which he termed to be the word of God, bearing down against the church, declaring unto the people that every priest and teacher ought to become popular, and that they ought not to labor with their hands, but that they ought to be supported by the people. So his doctrine was that teachers and preachers should be admired and supported by the people without having to do any labor. Nehor further taught that God would save everyone. There was no reason to fear, tremble, or worry about one's spiritual state because, quote, the Lord had created all men, and he had also redeemed all men. Therefore, everyone would have eternal life. I should clarify again that Nehor was not the Phantom Menace. We'll meet him in a minute. People believed Nehor's teachings and gave him money. He used his wealth to wear expensive clothing and to establish a church. But although several Nephites liked Nehor's message, not everyone was a fan. One such person, a teacher in the church, was named Gideon. This is the same Gideon we met 60 years earlier as a strong young man. He's the one who attacked King Noah and chased him up his watchtower. He's also the one who came up with a strategy that allowed Limhi's people to escape from the Lamanites. When Gideon saw Nehor going about preaching, he had something to say about it. When Nehor met Gideon, it says, he began to contend with him sharply that he might lead away the people of the church. But the man, Gideon, withstood him, admonishing him with the words of God. Nehor was a persuasive guy, noted for his much strength, as we read earlier. But Gideon wasn't persuaded, and although he was at least 80 years old now, he was not intimidated. Now, because Gideon withstood him with the words of God, he, Nehor, was wroth with Gideon, and drew his sword and began to smite him. Now, Gideon, being stricken with many years, therefore he was not able to withstand his blows, therefore, he was slain by the sword. Witnesses brought Nehor before Alma, the chief judge, where he, quote, pled for himself with much boldness. I've tried to imagine what argument Nehor could possibly make to justify killing an 80-year-old man with a sword. Maybe he argued that Gideon had provoked him into attacking, or maybe he admitted that his temper had finally gotten the better of him and asked for leniency, or maybe since he was rich, he asked to be given a fine or forgiven since this was his first offense. It doesn't say. It just says he pled with much boldness. But Alma was not persuaded. Alma said, in verse 13, "Thou hast shed the blood of a righteous man, yea, a man who has done much good among this people. And were we to spare thee, his blood would come upon us for vengeance." Alma said that the Nephites were ruled by laws. So no matter how persuasive Nehor's arguments might be, the law, which was written by King Mosiah, had been ratified by the people, and it required murderers to be slain. So Nehor was taken to the top of the hill Manti, where he acknowledged that his teachings were contrary to the word of God, and there he suffered an ignominious, which means shameful or disgraceful, death. But Nehor's influence lived on. Quote, "For there were many who loved the vain things of the world. His followers continued to preach the doctrine of wealth and material prosperity and persecuted church members. This persecution was a real trial for some church members, and they left the church entirely because of it. Many left, but most didn't. Instead, they humbly and steadfastly kept the commandments of God. Church leaders labored alongside the members of their congregation, considering themselves to all be equal. Church members provided food and clothing to people who needed it, regardless of church membership. They wore simple clothes, which were described as, quote, neat and comely. Those who didn't belong to the church, by contrast, quote, did indulge themselves in sorceries and in idolatry or idleness and in babblings and in envyings and strife, wearing costly apparel, being lifted up in the pride of their own eyes, persecuting, lying, thieving, robbing, committing whoredoms, and murdering, and all manner of wickedness." And this led to an interesting outcome. By obsessing over riches, Nehor's followers developed habits that made them less able to obtain them. By contrast, church members worked to help one another and didn't care about showing off. And thus, verse 31 tells us, "and thus they did prosper and become far more wealthy than those who did not belong to their church." After Nehor's execution, we fast forward about 4 years. The Nephites were in a state of growing contention and confusion. Animosity between church members and non-members increased, and a man named Amlici, who was after the order of Nehor, did what he could to fuel the flames. Nehor, we discussed, had wanted religious teachers to be popular and be supported by the people, and they should be free to teach whatever religious beliefs would attract the most significant following. And Amlici was after this order. Now, for the story of Amlici to make sense, we need to make a quick detour to discuss a matter of translation. In the book of Alma, we'll meet two groups of dissenters: the Amlicites, who are mentioned in Alma 2 and Alma 3, and the Amalekites, who are mentioned in chapter 21 and onward. But it now seems likely that they were one and the same group, and Amalekite is simply a misspelling of Amlicite. Royal Skousen is a BYU linguistics professor with the assignment, or opportunity, of going through Joseph Smith's original Book of Mormon manuscript, as well as the printer's manuscript, at least insofar as these documents have been preserved, and learning what he can from them. I don't have time today to go into all the details, but based on the original handwritten manuscript of the Book of Mormon, Skousen concluded that the word Amalekite should have been, quote, Amlicite in every instance. The short version is that there was a change of scribes and the new scribe wrote it differently, which is why we have Amlicites in chapters 2 and 3 and Amalekites from chapter 22 onward. To be fair, there are those who disagree with this theory, but it makes sense to me and it helps the story make a lot more sense, as you'll see in just a second. But because of this, going forward, anytime I see the word Amalekite, I will pronounce it as Amlicite. Here's why it matters. Alma chapter 2, where Amlici starts to exert influence among the Nephites, takes place in about 87 BC, 5 years after Alma became the first chief judge. This means that the sons of Mosiah left on their missions to the Lamanites at least 5 years earlier. It tells us in Alma 21 that Aaron, one of the sons of Mosiah, made his first stop in a city called Jerusalem, located on the borders of the land of Mormon. Verse 2. Now the Lamanites and the Amlicites and the people of Amulon had built a great city which was called Jerusalem. So at least 5 years before we meet Amlici in Alma 2, his followers and also the Amulonites, who were the descendants of King Noah's priests, had already finished building a great city. So they must have been in the area for a significant amount of time before that. And it came to pass that Aaron came to the city of Jerusalem and first began to preach to the Amlicites. And he began to preach to them in their synagogues. For they, the Amlicites, had built synagogues after the order of the Nehors. For many of the Amlicites and Amulonites were after the order of the Nehors. So, more than 5 years before we meet Amlici, and before we even meet Nehor, the Amlicites and the influence of Nehor were already well established among the Lamanites. They were setting up churches and exerting influence among them. So Nehor and Amlici were not a sudden flash in the pan. They had been among the Lamanites for a long time. And that will become important before we're done today. The Amlicites and followers of Nehor had been among the Lamanites for a long time, but the changes that we discussed in the last two videos now allowed Nehor and Amlici to expand their following into the land of the Nephites. In Mosiah 26, Alma allowed Nephites to leave the church, but still remain among the Nephites. In other words, you could now have non-believers among the Nephites. In Mosiah 29, King Mosiah changed the government so that the leaders were elected by popular vote. That may be why we see Nehor traveling around preaching the very first year after the government changed. And now we come back to Amlici. Amlici, it tells us, was a cunning man, and, quote, it was his intent to destroy the church of God. He had been simmering as an outcast among the Lamanites for a long time, and now he wanted his revenge. He used the historic tension between members and non-members of the church to fuel his popularity and to rally his supporters. Here's verse 2. And this Amlici had, by his cunning, drawn away much people after him, even so much that they began to be very powerful. And they began to endeavor to establish Amlici to be a king over the people. Amlici's campaign to be king reached a point where the government could no longer ignore it. So they held a vote. People gathered throughout the land and, quote, cast in their voices on whether Amlici should be king. And it came to pass that the voice of the people came against Amlici that he was not made king over the people. But Amlici, who is the Phantom Menace that I referenced at the beginning, wasn't done yet. There was rejoicing by the opposition throughout the land when he was defeated, when he lost the election, but it was premature. When Amlici, he could not become king by democratic means, he resorted to violence. He persuaded his followers to officially separate from the Nephites and form their own independent nation. The newly formed group of Amlicites consecrated Amlici to be their king. And his first order of business as king was to command his subjects to arm themselves and conquer the Nephites. Let's pause for a minute. Amlici had just lost a national election. So he had to know that numbers were not on his side. But despite being outnumbered by the Nephites, he had an ace up his sleeve. Set that aside for a minute. He attacked the Nephites, but they were ready for the attack. Verse 12, the people of the Nephites were aware of the intent of the Amlicites, and therefore they did prepare to meet them. Yea, they did arm themselves with swords, and with scimitars, and with bows, and with arrows, and with stones, and with slings, and with all manner of weapons of war of every kind. Alma, the chief judge, governor, and high priest, personally led his people into battle. But although Amlici and his followers attacked with great strength, the Lord strengthened the Nephites, and soon the Amlicites were in full retreat. Alma and his army pursued the fleeing Amlicites, slaying as many of them as possible. Eventually the sun set, and the Nephites pitched their tents. A tally of bodies revealed that more than 6,000 Nephites and more than 12,000 Amlicites had been killed. Alma sent spies to follow the fleeing Amlicites and see what their next steps were going to be. The following morning, we find out what Amlici's ace up his sleeve had been. Alma's scouts returned in a panic, reporting that an army of Lamanites had joined the Amlicite army. The Amlicites had been exerting influence among the Lamanites for a long time, remember? And the combined army of Amlicites and Lamanites was marching on Zarahemla, the Nephite capital, with the land's inhabitants fleeing before them. When they heard this, the Nephite armies gathered their tents and ran towards Zarahemla. As they crossed the river Sidon, they were attacked. Verse 27, "And behold, as they were crossing the river Sidon, the Lamanites and Amlicites, being as numerous almost as it were as the sands of the sea, came upon them to destroy them." What followed was a huge battle, with the Nephites eventually emerging victorious. However, the battles of this time had an unusual element when compared to battles of today. The kings and leaders were not sitting at a distance directing tactics and such. They were personally engaged in the conflict. At one point, Alma and Amlici fought each other personally, face to face with swords. At first, neither prevailed. Then in verse 30, "And it came to pass that Alma, being a man of God, being exercised with much faith, cried, saying, O Lord, have mercy and spare my life, that I may be an instrument in thy hands to save and preserve this people. Now when Alma had said these words, he contended again with Amlici, and he was strengthened insomuch that he slew Amlici with the sword. The Phantom Menace was no more. Alma next attacked the king of the Lamanite army, but the Lamanite king fled, leaving Alma to fight against his guards. After killing the guards, Alma and his men cleared the bodies from the banks of the river, allowing the Nephite army to cross and attack the remaining Lamanite army. Despite having vastly superior numbers, the Lamanite army routed and fled. They were pursued to the northwest by the Nephite army until they reached a wilderness area called Hermounts, which wild and ravenous beasts infested. Verse 38, "And it came to pass that many died in the wilderness of their wounds, and were devoured by those beasts, and also the vultures of the air. And their bones have been found and have been heaped up on the earth." How convenient for Amlici that a Lamanite army decided to attack the Nephites at the same time that he did. But how inconvenient that they arrived a day late. This was probably why Amlici, who knew that he was outnumbered, was willing to attack the Nephites. He had probably coordinated a joint attack with the Lamanites. Amlici would attack Zarahemla from one side and the Lamanites would attack from the other, but maybe the Lamanite king misread the calendar. Whatever the reason, looks like he was a day late. Alma 3 begins with the Nephite army burying, literally, numberless fallen soldiers. Quote, "The number of the slain, it says, were not numbered because of the greatness of the number. When they finished, they returned towards Zarahemla, passing many locations where fields had been trampled and women and children had been murdered. They didn't bury the fallen Amlicites and Lamanites. The bodies of enemies who had died on the bank of the river Sidon were cast into the river and allowed to drift out to sea. It was easy to identify the Lamanites because they had dark skins, loincloths, and shaven heads. One might wonder how the Nephites would have been able to distinguish Amlicites, because they had been born Nephites, and they should have been physically indistinguishable from the Nephites. So Mormon gives us the answer in verse 4. "And the Amlicites were distinguished from the Nephites, for they had marked themselves with red in their foreheads after the manner of the Lamanites. Nevertheless, they had not shorn their heads like unto the Lamanites." Because the Amlicites had chosen to rebel against God, Mormon said in verse 18, "It was expedient that the curse of being marked should fall upon them." Mormon explained that wicked people brought their curses upon themselves, and he used the Amlicites as an example. Verse 18, "Now the Amlicites knew not that they were fulfilling the words of God when they began to mark themselves in their foreheads. Nevertheless, they had come out in open rebellion against God. Therefore, it was expedient that the curse should fall upon them." And then Mormon made his point. "Now I would that ye should see that they brought upon themselves the curse. And even so doth every man that is cursed bring upon himself his own condemnation." Then a second Lamanite army attacked. Alma was recovering from injuries from the first time, and he could not go to war. But he sent an army, and the army drove the Lamanites from the land, and they had no more trouble from their enemies for a while. Now we'll end with the trivia question. Alma was the first judge over the people of Nephi. Who was the second? Who was the second chief judge over the Nephites? If you know, leave a comment with the answer. And we will see you next time.